here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Jackson on the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
What? Get no punt.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome into Big Blue Kickoff Live. Anita Marks here with Roman Oben. What is up? Give me some love. Yes.
What's up, dude?
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah,
doing
great. Chicks love being called dudes.
That means that's a closer level of broness.
Okay. I'm one of the guys.
I've
been told that my entire life. So we welcome you in again, another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, your hump day, your Wednesday crew, Anita Marks, Roman Oben, and of course you. Phone lines are open. 201-939-4513 is the phone number you want to get in on the show. That's how you do it. We welcome you. This show really, let's face it, is for the fans. Your opportunity to vent, of course, because the Giants start off the season 0-2. I'm sure that there's some frustrated, upset, concerned Giants fans out here. We are here for you, and we won't charge you for the therapy, right? Maybe Roman will.
It will be some therapy.
I don't know.
I charge for my professional advice. I don't know about.
I'm a lot more giving than Roman Oben. Just kidding. Also, all things social media, I will be paying attention to my computer. So hit us up on Twitter, @Giants, #GiantsChat, and I will monitor your tweets, and I will share them with everybody on the show. So that's how it works.
I'm ready to go.
Are you ready? Okay, well, let's kick it off first and foremost. If everyone, hopefully, a few of you tuned in to Giants.com or, of course, the MSG Network, where every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, is the Tom Coughlin press conference. So you actually hosted the MSG show to talk about it. Kind of give us what spirit is Tom Coughlin in? What did he communicate? What did he convey to the media today?
Well, I think we start off with, you know, just the news of the day, which was the fact that, you know, Thurman and Jernigan were out, and a lot of questions were being asked about replacing them and how to replace those guys. And obviously, Beason may be, you know, seeing a specialist on his foot.
Yeah,
this guy in North Carolina, Bob Anderson, actually did my foot surgery.
Oh, really?
I had two reconstructive foot surgery, at the end of my career.
Oh, so you know the guy.
Yeah, I know Bob Anderson. He's done everyone's surgery. But
okay.
You hope it's not that. But again, he was talking about that, talking about Victor Cruz, you know, the fact that he's a captain now, and he just has a higher level of accountability in terms of getting the locker room on the same page with what coaches are saying, in addition to the fact that, you know, we had some drops as far as the offensive staff had some drops in the fourth quarter last week, and that really helped prevent the Giants from sealing the deal.
Well, unfortunately, I have a pretty depressing stat here for you. Victor Cruz, 36.36% of targets dropped, worst in the NFL for any receivers who have been targeted 10 or more times. So, but we know Victor Cruz is better than that. Come on. Do you know what I mean? I mean, this is I call him a mud bug with all due respect because I do believe he thrives in that slot position. And that's what I call, like, the Wes Welkers and the Julian Edelmans and guys like that. I like to call them mudbugs. But nonetheless, we know what Victor Cruz can bring to the table. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's about starting fast. And when you're 0-2 and you haven't found a way to win and just play complete games, and that's team. That's so interceptions and turnovers and all those things are a result of everyone. A running game, you know, not being able to – you know, averaging 2.6 yards a carry, that's everybody's responsibility, not just one particular group. Obviously, the quarterback-to-receiver relationship is something that's always highlighted in the game. You know, you throw a pass, you got good protection, the receiver drops the ball. I mean, I think Eli Manning, Victor Cruz, the receiving core, they accept the high level of accountability that comes along with that. And I've heard a lot of national criticism that, you know, Eli Manning gets a pass all the time. And I don't think he does at all. I don't think there's anybody that wants to win more in this building than Eli Manning, Victor Cruz, and the people that are the leaders of this football team. But no matter what, you have to execute. And you have a big test against an undefeated Houston Texans team that's coming in Sunday with Fitzpatrick, he found his niche. You know, strong running game, solid defense. I mean, they play mistake-free football, and they find a way to win. They found a way to win, whether it's the Raiders and the Redskins or not. I mean, they found a way to be 2-0 and undefeated.
Well, I mean, you have a Victor Cruz who came out last week and said, I need more touches. I need more looks. You need to throw me the ball more. And then unfortunately has a crucial drop on third down, which I'm not putting it all on him. I mean, that he really had to stretch out for that. You know, it wasn't like it was in the breadbasket and he dropped it, but nonetheless, how does somebody like Victor Cruz, what does he need to do this week against the Texans to really get it back on track?
I think just like any NFL player, you've got to be accountable. You've got to focus and concentrate and look at the defense and look at the things that the coaches, the game plan that's given you. And you've got to go out there and say, this is a week where I'm going to catch balls or I'm going to help my team win no matter what. And I'm sure a guy like Victor Cruz would rather catch no balls and the team win than catch 10 and they lose. So these are the type of questions we're having. But obviously when you're 0-2, when you have a new offense, when you've got some questions from the fans – about how this offense looked in preseason. Now, you know, you're averaging 2.5 yards a carry. You're not having a robust offensive performances. Again, and I was going to say this later, but, you know, seeing what Larry Donnell's done has been tremendous. But there's still the guys that are leading the charge that are tipping the scale on the salary caps, if you will. I mean, those are the guys that are expected to do well. To get a pleasant surprise out of Larry Donnell or those kind of guys, you know, Hankins got a sack, I mean, which is great for him. So, see, those kind of things are good, but the guys that lead the charge, that have the C on their helmet, the captains, I mean, those are the guys that have to play well for this team or any team in the NFL.
Another thing that head coach Tom Coughlin mentioned to the media, that he addressed to the media, and this is really crucial. I want you to comment on this, Roman, and that is the turnover ratio. Giants -6, so they're tied with the Steelers in Kansas City in regard to no turnovers. They have not forced a turnover yet this season, and they're -6. Going up against a Texans team, that's +5 in their turnover ratio. Look, turnovers win ball games for you, and they lose ball games for you. How important is it for the Giants to come into this game and win that turnover ratio battle, and how do they do that?
It's important, and I think even the defense, the fact that they haven't forced any turnovers is a bit of a concern from just a fan's perspective. The chances of winning, the winning percentage, Anita, goes up significantly when you have an interception, when you have a pick six, when you have a sack fumble recovery, when you give the ball to the offense on the 30 going in because you just forced a big turnover. So those winning percentages go up when those kind of things happen, but, you know, unfortunately, the first 2 weeks, I mean, we saw Stevie Brown, like, man, he's back, oh, and he drops an interception that he could have had. You know, 2 years ago, he was all over the place. But so you see the elements coming. I still saw some positive things defensively in the sack department, stopping the run. There were still some positive things. But, again, that percentage of winning when a defense can force a turnover, even score a touchdown. I mean, Coach Coughlin always talks about the winning percentage when certain things happen. Special teams touchdowns, defensive touchdowns, defensive turnovers. Those are things that propel a team to victory. And I would probably add that those are the things that haven't happened thus far that has led to this 0-2 start.
Roman Oben, Anita Marks, you're listening to Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com and watching, of course, on Giants.com. Our phone lines are open, 201-939, bless you, Nile, 201-939-4513 is the phone number to get in. Also, all things social media, at Giants, hashtag Giants Chat. If you want to hit us up on social media, I'm monitoring social media. That's why I'm looking at my computer throughout the show, and I will share your tweets with Roman, of course, our viewers. With you until 1 o'clock Eastern time. So, Roman, we do have some callers on. Let's kick it off. Let's go to line two. Let's go to Dean calling in from Connecticut. Dean, you're first up on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Good afternoon. How you guys doing?
Great.
Hey, Dean.
I just have a few things. I'll be really quick, and I'll take it off the air. First of all, Antrell Roll saying this is a must-win. I mean, I got to kind of agree with him. It's put up or shut up at this point. We can't go 0-3. And two things I want to say. Has Devon Kennard been practicing? How's he been looking? Because with Beeson down, I'm not confident in Herzlick at all. Yeah. And finally, with Jernigan out, is this time for Corey Washington to step up and produce? And I'll take it off the air. Thanks
hey,
a lot, guys.
Three great questions. Thanks for being a part of it. Let's kick it off. Antrell Roll's comments. Must win. As we know, they started the season last year 0-6. That can't happen again.
Yeah, and I think Antrell Roll said that this is a must win just for the psychology of what happens when you go 0-3. I mean, this team went through that this time last year with an 0-6 start. I don't think any – and I talk about the chance of winning. The chances of going to the playoffs when you start off 0-3 are bad because you've got to win another three games just to get to 500, and now you're 3-3, and then all the other things. But again, the psychology of what happens to a team when they're 0-3, now you haven't won a game in a month, or you know if you go to week 4 before you win the first game. So this is a must-win for this football team. And I think they're looking at a Houston Texans team that, in terms of their approach, really conservative, run the ball. You know, Fitzpatrick throws these high-percentage passes. He's not airing it out downfield because he is turnover-prone in the past. You can force this kid to make turnovers. I know he went to Harvard. He's a smart kid, but you can force him to make turnovers. So it's important. This is a must-win. I agree 100%. And in terms of Kennard, you know, he's been out with the hamstring since the first half of the Detroit game in week one. But because of Beason, you know, you have some issues where you might move McClain to inside, and you can put Herzlik, you can put some other guys on the outside linebacker. But I was encouraged with what I saw out of Kennard in the preseason. And I said this in the press conference show. He's as polished of a linebacker that I've seen the Giants draft in the last 5 years. I mean, without a doubt.
Yes.
I remember in training camp, I mean, he was lighting guys up in drills that weren't live, and you got to go, hey, listen, it's not a live drill. When you got to tell a rookie not to be so physical, I mean, that's what this team needs. That's what any team needs, but that's what you need to play the linebacker position. So hopefully, Dean, he can come back with the hamstring. I don't know if it's this week or not, but when he does come in, you're going to see the rookie that's going to be a good, solid pickup in the middle rounds. And then last, Jernigan.
Well, wait, because I do want to continue my favorite quote from Roll this week was, we're going to bring the pain to the Texans. And again, I get it. He's a leader. You know, he's
a DB. That's a different kind of mentality. DB's mentality.
But
like
I
Will
kinda,
Beatty's saying we're going to bring
but
the
I
pain.
Kinda, but I but different. I like that. That was kind of my favorite quote so far this week, and I'm sure we'll have more to come. But if in fact, Kennard can go, from what I understand, McClain will be the Mike, Jaquan Williams will be the Will, and Kennard will be the Sam.
Right.
If of course he's healthy, more than likely that will be your starting linebacking core going into this Texans game.
And that's a big if, with the hamstring, with, Kennard. And
right.
also the last thing with Jernigan, being out, I think, you know, Preston Parker actually he fits more that Jernigan role. You know, he's a veteran. He's been in the league a couple of years. I still think Corey Washington has to continue to improve. I mean, we saw what he can do in that fade of the end zone. I mean, 5 touchdowns in preseason. Even opening day, they tried one first and goal against Detroit where he didn't quite come up with the ball. That he can do well. But the other things, I think this coaching staff, Tom Coughlin, offensively, you know, what can Corey Washington do in kickoff, special teams, you know, punt team as a gunner? I mean, those are things that are going to make Corey Washington, a complete receiver, a complete football player that's going to help this team win. He's not going to come in and get featured. This isn't preseason. You're not playing against guys that may or may not have made the team on their other defenses. But
yeah, but Giants fans were kind of spoiled with Victor Cruz. You know,
they saw Victor Cruz
really perform well against subpar talent. And then, of course, when he got his opportunity with the Giants, then, of course, he
still stepped up. But again, in terms of that type of receiver, I would put Parker ahead of Corey Washington. He's a veteran. He's a little smaller. I think he's a better route runner. I think he fits that Jernigan mold as the third guy. It was a compliment to Victor Cruz and Reuben Randall.
I want to share some tweets with you. Again, Anita Marks, Roman Oben with you till 1 o'clock Eastern time. Hit us up on Twitter at Giants, hashtag Giants Chat. This is from Beat the Texans. Really? Is that really his – or it's Dr. Ruiz – 81. Sorry,
you know,
it's hashtag.
You can change your Twitter name every week, and depending on what
can
team.
You? Yeah, okay, you can. So I guess his Twitter name right now is hashtag Beat the Texans. I kind of dig that. This is in dire need of a number one wide receiver. Of course, he's talking about the Giants. Let's talk about this wide receiving core. And no disrespect to Victor Cruz, but I said this when his contract issue came up. And number one wide receivers in the NFL, Roman, are getting paid $12 million a year. Okay, like Mike Wallace got $12 million to switch teams from Pittsburgh to the Dolphins. I didn't believe, again, I look at Victor Cruz, I look at him as a slot receiver. Slot receivers make anywhere between seven, if you're lucky, $8 million a year.
I mean, look what Wes Welker got when he got to Denver. I mean, he thought he was going to get all this money, but he was a slot guy, and he got
actually
it.
Offered him the same amount of money the Patriots were offering, but just went to go play for a different system and maybe a better quarterback right now. Tom Brady's been struggling this year, but I've derailed. Is there a legitimate number one wide receiver on this wide receiving core? I don't think so. And again, not a disrespect to Victor Cruz. I just don't see Victor Cruz as a number one.
But let's have this discussion. I mean, let's have this because I've had this discussion with a lot of people. Okay, Calvin Johnson is a number one receiver, right?
Oh, yeah.
Wallace, you know, is a number one receiver. A.J. Green in Cincinnati is a number one guy. Now, let's go back to Wallace. If he's not helping his team win based on his ability to stretch the field, The man covered is over the top. That opens up for everyone else. It's still a team game. And I go back to what I said to you last week about the receiving core that this system came from. Jordy Nelson, Donald Driver, I mean, those guys in Green Bay weren't number one guys. They didn't have one guy that ran a 4-3 that stretched the field and took the top off of defenses. That wasn't the case. They all ran their system well. They all knew their routes. They were all very efficient guys.
But
there wasn't a guy that was a 4.38 40 guy.
But I guess. But at the same
time,
I look
still dealing with a hamstring in Odell Beckham. Maybe is he the? I mean, so sometimes that's a label, and sometimes we can't confuse labels with an identity.
But I don't think throwing Green Bay into that mix is a fair analogy, because I look at Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb as like 1Bs. Do you know what I mean? Where maybe you don't classify them as a number one, but because you've got two such talented, kind of like on that cusp of a one or a two, I think it makes it very hard to defend them. And then, of course,
but if the team traded for Mike Wallace right now, would the team not be 0-2? No, absolutely not. I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's how you use the guy. And this is speaking from a football player's standpoint, locker room. When you got 11 guys break that huddle, whatever they call, whatever you worked on that week, that's what works. That's what wins. The Patriots won a 2001 Super Bowl with the most B- and C-plus grade guys of all time. And I know you want to talk about people will argue about the Tuck rule having something to do with that Super Bowl appearance. But, again, it's not about the labels. It's about the identity. And players play for an identity, and that's being tough, being physical, being efficient, being productive, catching balls, converting third downs, defense getting off the field, offense staying on the field. I mean, that's what matters. And when you start, you know, it almost becomes a fantasy discussion. Like, okay, who's the guy that stretches the field? Who's the number one? No, look, it doesn't matter. If Cruz at the end of the day has 80 catches for 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns, was he not a number one receiver, did he produce?
But this is where
Larry Fitzgerald playing slot.
I understand, but this is where I'm going with
Detroit's
this. Is that
putting
is
Calvin
that,
Johnson in the
when
slot
Hakeem,
to
when
get
Hakeem
more
Nicks
looks
was here and he was healthy and he was a legitimate number one, where safeties were you know, cheating on wherever Hakeem Nicks lined up, it opened things up for Victor Cruz. That's how I look at a number one. I look at a number one like a Calvin Johnson, who defenses are going to have to pay a lot of attention to and cheat, which is going to open up more for other wide receivers in that court. That's how I kind of establish a number one wide receiver.
Well, in that case, the number one receiver right now is Larry Donnell, because he's the guy getting the most targets. He's catching the most
balls.
And
what does that say?
And I'm being facetious. Obviously.
No, I know. No,
but he's
the most targeted. He's the most targeted player on the team right now.
When Plaxico Burst was here, it was, you can't coach 6'6", 220 pounds, jumping up 15 feet up in the air, catching the football. You can't coach that. So, but whatever system works, you have to be efficient at it and make it work for you.
201-939-4513. I know we've got a full bank of calls. Anita Marks, Robin Oben, let's get you started here. Let's go to line three. Andrew in New Jersey wants to get on board. Andrew, welcome.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Great show. Two quick points. I know everyone's high on Corey Washington, so am I. And I go back to week 4 last year against Chicago Bears. They were 0-3. It was the fourth quarter. They were making a comeback to win, and Eli threw a wobbler pass, like a high wobbly pass to Brandon Myers, who was a shorter tight end. So now I'm high on the tight ends, because we have taller tight ends with long arms, and I was never that worried about the tight end. So a tall receiver like Washington or Plaxico, I think that'll help Eli, who's not always the most accurate quarterback. And I just want to say my second point, I want Tiki, I'm starting a petition to ban him. The Bronco fans, they have a petition to ban Phil Sims from the broadcast, because he said something they thought was biased. But Tiki recently slammed Coughlin on the NFL Network on a documentary, and Eli all over again. So I'm going to start a petition. I got your names and mine on it so far. That's
Wait,
it, guys.
You're putting my name on what? I haven't signed anything, brother.
petition to ban Tiki from future ceremonies at Giant Stadium.
Look, we don't have to, thank you, Andrew. We don't have to have the Tiki Barber discussion. I mean, that's not. But honestly, look, I blocked for Tiki Barber for 3 years. You can't run away from the fact that he's the greatest running back in Giants history. Period. Now, and I know I was on that segment NFL Network, which was taped 2 years ago, so it's not like Tiki Barber just said it last week. So let's not tell the fans that Tiki Barber didn't say anything recently about Tom Coughlin. Everyone knows he announced his retirement at the beginning of the season, and that perceivably was a distraction. And at the time, he felt like there were some issues with leadership. It's been well proven that Tiki Barber was wrong in what he said. But he felt he was right in his conviction, what led him to say that. As a man, he says whatever he wants. He was wrong. Giants won the Super Bowl. History, you know, has shown that. But again, I don't agree with some of the boos that happened at that time in 09, I think, when he got honored because of the, you know, I think he had his girlfriend at the time who he eventually married. I mean, anyone going through a divorce or any of that, I mean, those are all personal things. No one should get booed. You shouldn't get booed because you got fired or going through a divorce. I mean, it should be about football. And I think there have been some players in this organization that fans have cheered, Lawrence Taylor, if you will. And they've had worse issues than the D word and divorce and all that other stuff. So I really don't want to, you know, speak out of turn about this topic, but let's stick to football and let's stick to the X's and O's and let's stick to educating fans, which is my role and obviously your role as a host and a moderator. The taller tight ends, I know the Brandon Myers play, the Chicago game. Yeah, I mean, that made the difference, 6 inches a foot. If Brandon Myers was taller, he would have caught. I mean, we're not there. I mean, I think the Giants have closed the page on that 2013 season. Again, I did say you can't coach 6'6", too. But 6'6 guys drop balls, too. 6'6 guys get the ball thrown behind them as well. And 6'6 guys get the ball overthrown to them as hard as you would like that to believe. But again, let's not entertain anything about what I mean, this is an old subject that's been really beaten into the ground.
All right. We could.
I always wish, as a football player, I wish Tiki the best for just his life and what he's had to go through. But again, we're not talking about 2006.
Well, let's take some more calls. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Ethan calling in from California. Ethan, welcome.
201-939-4513.
Hi, Ethan. You've got to. We're on a delay, so you've got to turn your internet down or however you're.
Oh, yeah, I muted it.
Okay, what's your question?
Well, my question is, like, I don't really see this team being that much better than last year. I mean, looking at the schedule, I could see this going up to easily 0-11 at this point. I don't really, like, I think by the time the offense starts to get clicking, I think it's going to be, we're going to be in that tough, brutal stretch, and I think it's going to be too tough to recover from. Like, I don't, do you see it being better? Like, do you see this offense clicking soon? Because I don't see it.
Well, Ethan,
thanks for the call.
Thank you. It's a good thing he's not in the locker room. I'm glad the players don't feel that way, or else he might as well not practice,
you know,
every Wednesday.
I hate to
lose every game.
I mean, I hate to say this, Roman. I know that you and I are just starting to host this show. I hosted this show with, of course, Paul Dottino and Lance Meadow all preseason, but this is not a surprise to me. I don't know why this would be a surprise to Giants fans. What did we see in the preseason offensively? We saw really an anemic offense that it's a slow growth process. I had some big concerns them starting the season without the production that we saw in the preseason. So probably the bigger surprise for me, Ethan, is the defense. The defense and teams being able to pass against a secondary that I really thought would be a top five secondary in the NFL. And obviously, you know, stats aren't everything. Numbers aren't everything. You have to really see how a game progresses and what develops. But nonetheless, I'm more surprised on the defensive side of the ball in their pass protection than the offense. I anticipated this from the offense. I hate to say it. I did.
Well, now, if you don't have the drops, look, Monday night on the road in the dome, that's, you know, week one, that's fine. You can deal with that loss. JPP had a 1.5 sacks. You saw four different guys get after the quarterback. You saw this team stopping the run, shutting down the run for the most part. You're seeing elements of what this team can do as they continue to improve. And thank goodness that the fans' perspective stays outside the locker room. And as a player who played in the league for 12 years at one of the most difficult positions to play at left tackle, you've got to go out there every, you know, Wednesday's like a Monday in the NFL, so today's a Wednesday. If you play a Sunday game, you've got to go out there every Wednesday morning and wake up that you have a chance to win if you follow the game plan, if you execute properly. Because when you wake up Monday morning, you watch film, you say, man, this is a play that we missed, this is something we should have done better. I mean, it comes down to this, Anita. I mean, it's a big this. It's the difference in winning and losing is that much. And the teams that go 7-9, like the Giants did last year, teams that go 11-5 are the teams that execute. Now, whether that comes from a belief system, whether that comes from what level of accountability, whether it's a locker room or whether it's a defensive-led team. I mean, I played on a Super Bowl championship team that for 7 or 8 weeks, our offense wasn't clicking at all. And we were winning games 13-10 because of our defense. And we played some bad teams that we beat to kind of give us some, you know, I mean, I don't want to pick on the Raiders or anybody else who I mean, Giants are winless as well. But it took time. And you're right, the defense, create turnovers, pick sixes, that would be great for this football team because that would allow this team some leeway to let this offense continue to build confidence, execute, and do the things that it takes to win a football game. I saw Eli Manning standing upright in the pocket. I saw the ball getting distributed. I mean, one tackle away from seeing a 50, 60-yard run that significantly changes that run average of like 2.5, whatever the run average is at this point in the season. But I think fans see what they see, and you put on their product on Sunday, then when the product doesn't look good, you're open for criticism, which is fine, which is a part of this game. But from a locker room perspective, you wake up every Monday or every Wednesday morning saying, if we do what we're capable of doing, we have a chance to win. And that's what the player sees, and that's how he thinks. The player doesn't say, we're going to mail in and probably go 0-11 nobody thinks like that. If you think like that and coaches say it, hand in your shoulder pads and go do something else.
201-939-4513. We continue with Elijah calling in from Indianapolis. Elijah, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. You're on with Roman Oben and Anita Marks.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, Elijah.
Hey, to be honest, I'm so scared. We're going to, like, repeat what we did last year. Hopefully that does not happen. But I want to talk about the defense. So we lost Walter Thurman. So we have McBride coming in and Nickel. I guess it's okay because McBride he did pretty good last year. So, do you guys know the latest update on John Beeson?
Well, John Beeson is I think he's going to go see a foot specialist.
Thanks for the call.
We talked about this. Thank you. We talked about this earlier in the show. He's going to go see a foot specialist, possibly. Maybe the guy in North Carolina, Bob Anderson. I'm not sure. I don't want to misquote that, but. I mean, Coach Kaufman said today that he wouldn't put anything past Beeson to just try to play Sunday. But again, I think my concern is with 14 games in the regular season, if you're going to say definitively that you can have Beeson for 10 games, no matter what, 10 games or 11 games, or whatever that is, you don't want to do anything that's going to make him miss more time with these doctor's evaluations. And one thing I appreciate about this Giants medical staff is they make the decision. The doctor makes the decision. It's not, oh, I think I can go, let me go. Or coach thinks you should go and you try to go play, then you hurt yourself.
Right, like RG3 in Washington two years ago, right?
Right. But again, I think the people in the Giants organization, the medical staff, I would arguably say the best in the league because I played for four teams. The Giants are the best medical staff in the NFL. Ronnie Barnes, Steve Connelly, and Byron, all those guys do a great job. But the medical staff makes that decision because it's more important about the life of your career, not just the football part.
Again, you could hit us up on Twitter at Giants, hashtag Giants Chat. I'm monitoring Twitter throughout the show and sharing your questions and comments with our viewers. I love saying that.
Viewers.
This is our second week.
We've got viewers.
This is our second week that Big Blue Kickoff Live is
I love it.
Able to be viewed. So this is from Sunny Boy. Wants to know, do you have any info on Snyder? Will he be getting any playing time this week?
I don't think at this point. He's not on the injury list. And
he just has to get more familiar with this offense, right?
Yeah, as a veteran, I mean, you can learn an offense in about 2 weeks in terms of the – and as a lineman, you're talking about protections, the protection schemes, the calls, the audibles. You're not learning routes and pick blitz pickup. So it's different. But I think he could probably be able to help this team win. Relatively sooner than later, but I wouldn't imagine this week he'd be ready to play. But you never know. I mean, he could be as a reserve guy, as a backup. When the team's at home, you don't have the communication issues as you would on the road. So I think it'd be easier to play at home because you could tap Beattie or somebody next door and say, hey, what do we do on this player? Or what's going on here? And you could recognize things versus on the road. communication becomes a little more difficult. But I'm pretty sure as a veteran, I've been a veteran that's switched teams and had to learn a new offense on the fly, and it's you've got to really put in the work, the film time, and all that things to get it done.
All right, let's continue with our calls. Keep them coming, folks. Let's go to Don calling in from the West Coast, the Left Coast, California. Don, welcome to the show. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And just a couple comments. You know, one, the Giants' defense is it's really bad. And then kind of piggybacking on what you said, we can't have the breakdowns that they're having. And also, with the offense being so challenged, Eli can't have the turnovers. He had too many last year, and he's got to throw the ball away or take the sack. But the turnovers are killing us. So pretty much that's all I had to say, and thanks for taking my call.
You know, I want to point to two interceptions at this point of the season, you know, and it's like when it rains, it pours. You know, Eli Manning threw an interception against Detroit Lions that it was almost the opposite of the catch, the helmet catch in the Super Bowl, where the interception hits, throws it low, and it rolls off a defender's arm and head and shoulder, and that's an interception.
Right.
An interception Sunday that hit Tommy Kelly. I played against Tommy Kelly. This guy's still playing in the NFL. He's probably my age. I mean, he wasn't rushing the pass. He was standing there. Ball gets tipped off a defender's shoulder, and that's an interception. So, yeah, I mean, we could talk about each interception individually and how they happen, but it's unfortunate the type of turnovers that Eli Manning's thrown, those two in particular, because you see the frustration in his face. You can't script those kind of things. Like, if a ball gets tipped, three-step drop, it hits a guy, actually tips it, and the defender runs it back for a turn, that can happen. But a ball bouncing off a defender's shoulder who's laying on the ground or another, I mean, those are unfortunate. But again, Eli Manning has a lot of accountability with those picks. But again, defensively, one thing we haven't talked about, Anita, is this team had a chance to win, and the punt coverage team gave up a touchdown. The punt return team coughed the ball up. I mean, so that has nothing to do with how offense and defense perform. So this is still a team game, and that third element, special teams, is critical for a team to win.
But don't you feel that was a risk going in with Steve Weatherford, knowing that he has these torn ligaments in his ankle, that he can punt the ball, but he is our last phase of defense. And if you look back at his tenure with the Giants, he's actually made a few great tackles to
save, not in the middle of the field,
to save touchdowns.
Look, by the time that punt returner gets to the punter, that means he's been running for 20 or 30 yards. And if it's a sideline, push out of bounds thing, that's one thing. But Ted Ginn was in the middle of the field. I mean, I don't think Steve Weatherford, any punter in the National Football League, does linebacker tackling drills in the middle of the week just in case. I mean, you have to assume that the other 10 guys that are covering those punts are going to neutralize the returner.
I totally understand that. But I'm just saying, going into this game with Steve Weatherford and knowing that he had those torn ligaments in his ankle, you knew he could punt the ball, but if it ever came down to that last phase of defense, you had 10 men on the field, not 11. You know.
I hear you, but I don't agree.
Okay, and that's fine. We can...
I still love you, though.
We can agree to disagree.
Yeah. By the time
makes for a better entertaining show, Roman.
Yeah. I mean, coaches always say if the punter or the kicker has to push a guy out of bounds or tackle, that means there's 10 other guys that haven't done their job to that point.
201-939-4513. Let's continue with JB calling in from North Carolina. JB.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. had a quick question for Roman about the run game. It looks like J.D. Walton and Weston Richburger are having a lot of difficulty up the middle, and I still don't really think we've seen a lot of Henry Hynoski. So my question is, when you're struggling with the run game up the middle, wouldn't having a fullback in there kind of help to remedy that situation? And if not, what do you think the reason is that we haven't seen more of Henry Hynoski?
Well, I think there's circumstantial reasons why you haven't seen a lot of Henry Hynoski. You go back to the week one against Detroit, I think he had 6 snaps. You know, 3 of them were fades in the end zone. You know, fullback's not as effective, you know, when you're actually throwing the football. You don't want to be I've always been very cautious about, like, you can't be what's the word? Predictable.
Right. Yeah.
You don't want to be predictable.
That's a good one. It's a good word.
When you put a fullback in, okay, here comes the lead, or here comes the ride 37, or here comes this play. Well, here comes Heinoski. Everyone knows it. I mean, but the running game is the responsibility, JB, of everyone, not just the O-line, not just the center and the guard. Obviously, you've got to sustain your blocks. You've got to get the running back past the line of scrimmage so that he can at least fall forward for 3 or 4 yards, and if the perimeter, the tight end, the receivers, they're blocking too. There's backs that can break big runs, but there's nothing you need to change with the running game, but you just have to continue to work at it because the big runs will come, and hopefully they'll come this Sunday.
But here we are. We're talking about the offensive line and how they've been struggling and Eli Manning not getting enough time. When I think max protect, when I look back there, to me, Henry Heinoski would be a viable option for that pass protect at times. I'm kind of with the caller. I'm surprised we haven't seen him more in there to help with pass protect.
Again, I think you always go into the game with packages and things that you plan to do, and some of it becomes circumstantial. So it depends on how the game's going. If you're behind, you're going to probably throw the ball a little bit more. The team still, the attempts aren't the issue. It's the what they're getting out of the run. So if you started seeing 10, 15-yard runs, okay, here comes Heinoski. Let's do play action with him in the game and dump it over to Danelle. Now let's take him out. Let's do another run. Now let's bring him back in. Instead of play action, let's do the run that we initially planned. So until you're in the game and you're in the meeting rooms during the week and you really know what they're trying to implement during the week, I mean, let's not assume that these coaches don't know what they're doing on Sundays. I mean, everyone wants to be a coach or a play caller when you see an offense or defense isn't being productive. But I think Henry Heinoski fairly beat out Terminator in training camp. Connor for a reason. And again, I think when we have this show in week 14, let's look at the numbers. Look at how Heinoski was used.
Also,
another
thing is, I really look at this offense very similar, obviously, to the Green Bay Packers, because that's where Ben McAdoo's kind of implemented it from. And I was assuming, we all know what happens, we assume sometimes, but I was assuming that he would utilize Henry as the Packers utilize Kuhn.
Right.
But we're not seeing that either. And it could be a skill set. I mean, I don't know. I've never really covered Kuhn. I don't know. Kuhn might have better hands, or it might be faster, or whatever the case may be. Anyway, let's continue with our calls. 201-939-4513. We go to Andre calling in from New Jersey. Andre, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm calling. My first time calling. I'm glad that you guys have this show. I wanted to state something about the fact that Tom Coughlin, he doesn't like to play his rookies, like Corey Washington, for instance. We have Jarrell Jernigan. He's now currently down. And I remember when we had an injury the same way with he skipped my mind. Oh, Cruz. When Cruz went down, and he really didn't go down, but they actually had him on injured reserve for the whole year, but he was like a sensation in, during preseason. So then all of a sudden during the season, he wasn't around. I was like, what happened to Cruz? Why wasn't he available? And come to find out, they had put him on injured reserve. So here we have Corey Washington. They put him in like for one fade play, and he hasn't gotten a chance. It's like Coughlin doesn't like to play these rookies, and I'm just trying to figure out, will he give this kid a chance?
Yeah, Corey Washington's not technically a rookie.
Yeah,
he was on the practice squad.
Yeah, Corey Washington is not a rookie. I mean,
okay.
just FYI. But I will say this, and Andre, thank you for the call. And appreciate that this is your first call into Big Blue Kickoff Live, and we love that you're spending your lunch hour with us.
We need some sound effect for a first caller.
Please know that. You're absolutely right. I mean, head coach Tom Coughlin is a little apprehensive in regard to playing rookies their first year. And he is an old school kind of coach, an old school kind of mentality.
Are you talking offense or defensive playing rookies? Because there have been some rookies that have played.
No, played. I think offense. I think he was a little apprehensive to play David Wilson, David Wilson's rookie year.
I mean, Justin Pugh started all 16 games as a rookie.
Well, didn't I he think- have Didn't he kind of have to?
Oh, yeah. Well,
David Deal got injured.
Are we talking about specific positions at rookies, or are we talking about skilled players?
Skilled
well,
players.
Well, then that goes in the category of are you getting everything down mentally? Are you eliminating the mental errors so that you can establish trust in the coaching staff? Now, I love Corey Washington and what he's done for this team, and he earned his right to be on this football team as an active member of this roster, but playing well against guys on the other side that a lot of them don't make their teams in preseason, having these stellar fourth quarter preseason games doesn't always translate to what you're going to do on Sundays or in regular season. Now, what it does do is gives you confidence, teaches you how to play an NFL game. I mean, David Wilson played as a rookie. I mean, he was getting carries. He coughed it up in that Dallas game and was put in a doghouse. I mean, rightfully so. So it's not like Tom Coughlin, oh, you're a rookie, you're not going to play. I mean, this isn't 20 years ago where you just sit a guy for 2 years because there's always older veterans on the team. You know, salary caps weren't as big of an issue back then. But, I mean, you've seen rookie quarterbacks play around the league. But on this team in particular, I haven't seen a case where there's a rookie that knows this stuff, knows what to do, has established confidence in the coaching staff, and still isn't playing. I haven't seen that. I mean, Reuben Randall, this is his third year in the league mm-hmm. now. Last year, he still was having mental errors in terms of his communication with Eli Manning, where he runs a go, Eli Manning throws a hitch, and that's not a rookie. I mean, who was behind? I mean, and you had Jernigan behind him, who plays Cruz's position as a slot. It's not like, well Jernigan was behind Cruz. Well, you're going to play Jernigan? He's not going to play Jernigan because he's younger? No, he's behind Cruz, and Cruz is a better player at that position. So I think you can sprinkle rookies in, and you want to build their confidence. You want to have them continue to improve. Coach Coughlin has always talked about the young guys got to come along. He always talks about that in preseason. They've got to come along. They got to continue to improve. It's about your career, not having a blowout season. But, again, I've yet to see a rookie who should be playing and isn't because Coach Coughlin just doesn't play rookies. I've yet to see that.
All right, so Roman Oben and Anita Marks with you for another 20 minutes here on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
It goes by fast, man.
Giants, that's because you're with me.
Yeah.
Giants.com. Really quick, this is the pre-practice injury report. Giants players are practicing right now as we host this show, just a stone's throw away. Odell Beckham Jr., hamstring issue. John Beeson, his toe, and James Brewer, his back. So those are three players that were on the pre-practice injury report. Kennard as well with his hamstring, Marcus Kuhn with his ankle, Steve Weatherfield with his ankle. But I think there was a lot of hope that Odell Beckham Jr. would play this Sunday against the Texans. So I'm really curious. As soon as we get done with the show here at 1 o'clock, I'm really anxious to step out there onto the practice field and see exactly what is Odell Beckham doing. Is he running routes on the side with one of the wide receiver coaches? Is he at least participating in a portion of practice? I really feel that that's the B12 shot this offense needs.
this
week against the Texans is a healthy and an active Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah, and I think, you know, not in terms of silencing the critics last week, but when we talked about this discussion after that Detroit game, saying, oh, this team's not talented, it's not talented, you know, I'll go back and reiterate that you couldn't have scripted a first-round pick who's an explosive player and who had a first-round rating by most, you know, scouts and teams in the NFL, that he'd be out. You couldn't have scripted what happened to David Wilson in training camp. You couldn't have scripted that. So I'm looking forward to seeing the day when Odell Beckham can really help this team win, contribute, and eventually win. I think he's an explosive returner. He played at a high level in college. He never had an injury bug in college, so hopefully this thing,
seen a hamstring issue linger like this with any of your teammates before, Roman? I mean,
are you
surprised how long this has transpired?
Yeah, you know, he's a track guy. You know, track guys get those hamstring issues. I think when you're a fat guy, O lineman, you know, you don't really pull any hamstrings, but you know, those, they're very delicate because a hamstring can be a 10-week injury, it could be a 2-week injury, and the rating of which his hamstring is injured or at the rate of which it's improving is determined by the Giants, you know, medical staff. So I hope for Odell Beckham's sake, for Giants fans, the organization, that, I mean, I don't want to put a time on his injury because I don't know the extent, but
we're just
before Halloween,
optimistic,
realistically,
optimistic,
he's contributed to this team significantly.
As we know, the Giants sitting right now at 0-2. The Texans up next. They are 2-0. They beat Washington and they beat the Oakland Raiders. Ryan Fitzpatrick, their quarterback. Andre Johnson, Denard Hopkins is their number two wide receiver. Arian Foster is their running back. Had a great week two. Arian Foster did. J.J. Watt scored a touchdown in week two. He came in offensively and scored a touchdown. No one's really talking about Brian Cushing and the fact that he's back and he's healthy. And the Texans, +5 turnover ratio. Head coach Tom Coughlin addressed that in his press conference earlier today. Just to give you some insight on this Texans team that's coming to town. 201-939-4513 is the phone number. Let's go to Atlanta. Dre is on hold. Dre, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, Anita? Hey, Roman, how you doing?
Hey, Dre.
Okay. Hey, I got a couple of quick statements. One, you know, Odell Beckham Jr., his injury is starting to look scarily close to when we drafted Sonoris Moss, where he spent half the season on the sideline because he had that thigh injury. But, you know, it seems like the Giants have a habit, or I wouldn't even call it a habit, the situations where their players have hamstring injuries. When we had Ross sat on the sideline for an extended period of time because of a hamstring, you know. Now, I have a question. How are we going to address the linebacker situation now that, you know, Kennard and possibly Beeson is out? I can't see having Herzlick as middle linebacker and keeping McClain on the side, on the outside. So I think the best lineup we could have is McClain in the middle, have Spencinger and Williams, if you got his act together, out there as our linebackers. And possibly we can contain one of these tight ends and Arian Foster coming out of the backfield. I'm going to go ahead and listen to your response on that one. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Dre. We're getting a lot of calls from down south, California. I mean, Giants fans, Big Blue
Nation,
all over the country.
I
love it.
And it's great. Thank you so much for tuning in here at Giants.com.
And I think we discussed the Odell Beckham, I hope he was listening, issue, but right before we talked for length about Odell Beckham, hopefully he gets back soon. I don't like to compare an injury in 2014 to something that happened 5 years ago. Everything's on a case-by-case basis. I know Ross had Zanoris Moss. I would like to imagine that Odell Beckham is a significantly better player and contributor than Zanoris Moss was. I remember doing the preseason games. He'd have a great, you know, fourth preseason game, and then make the team, and then you wouldn't see him as much. But, again, Odell Beckham, we've talked about that. The linebacker, I think the goal, and we'll probably learn about this more at the end of the week, is to put McClain back to the middle if Beeson can't go. You know, Kennard's got the hamstring issue. You can put Jaquan Williams at the outside or Paysinger, and even Herzlick can play outside as well. But McClain, I think, would be the most natural fit to play a middle linebacker in the absence of John Beeson on Sunday.
The biggest knock that I've heard in regard to Herzlick in playing the middle linebacker position is communication, and lack thereof when he's at that spot. Talk about the importance of that Mike linebacker and how important it is to be a good communicator and to communicate maybe more than less when you're playing that position.
Well, before the safeties became the new Mike linebackers of the NFL, it was always the Mike linebacker. I mean, the middle, the Mike, that's why they're called the Mike. I mean, they call the defenses out. They get the signal from the sideline. They line everybody up. They tap the butts. So the D linemen, they shift them. And you also have to know what's going on behind you. And sometimes you've seen middle linebackers, for those of you who are watching it, signal. You know, I've seen Brian Urlacher in the past pointing up in the air for it's a pass or London Fletcher. I mean, middle linebackers are a critical point to any team's defense. And I think McClain would do exceptionally well going back inside, you know, coming from that Baltimore Ravens, you know, system where you almost use two middle linebackers and they're both interchangeable. So I think that would be a good fit. And again, the other guys, I mean, Paysinger has played, has started. Herzlick has started. I mean, you can live with those guys playing. And that's why those guys make the team. They're excellent special teams contributors, but when you have to play a game or two or start, and then those guys can get it done. It's going to take a team effort to beat the Houston Texans. You've got one of the better running backs in the NFL, in Arian Foster, with that zone run system that obviously Kyle Shanahan got from Gary Kubiak, who got it from Mike Shanahan, Kyle's dad. So the Texans have kept that same offensive system in place when they made a change at the head coaching position. I think that's what really helped and Foster, and that's really helped Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback to keep, you know, you're handing off the ball to Arian Foster 30 times, you're handing the ball off, then you're dumping a little dumping guy, Andre Johnson, you've got a lot of other complimentary guys. It's good for them, but it's going to take a team effort, but definitely the middle linebacker position is something that's going to be important. This team longed for a solid middle linebacker play since Jesse Armstead and who played outside, but AP, Antonio Pierce, and obviously you had some other guys in between there, but that's a critical part of the defense, and I know Harry Carson would be proud of a 53 in the middle, playing middle linebacker at his signal caller.
Let's continue with our calls. We go to Phoenix. Anthony, welcome on board. What's your question? What's your comment?
Good morning, Anita. Good morning, Roman.
Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good afternoon for you guys. I'd like to stay a little positive, guys. I like
thank
that
you.
Third quarter. That third quarter. Well, I'm thanking you, Roman, because you're keeping the show positive. Let's look at some of the positive things. The offensive line was a lot better this game. Eli was a lot better this game, this past game. If we didn't shoot ourselves in the foot, if Jennings didn't drop that pass, he actually slipped and dropped. And then, you know, Demps had a lousy game. Demps had a lousy game. He could have actually, if you look at the tape, I watched the tape this morning and recovering everything over. That first, that Jin ran back, Demps had a shot at him. If he'd only dove, he could have got him like at the 34 yard line. But he didn't dive. He tried to catch him. And that's not going to happen. The other thing I'd like to talk about, Beasham was limping most of the game. I don't know if you noticed that. Whether it's the boot that he had on or whatever protection, you look early in the game, you're going to see Beasham limping, and you got to give him kudos for trying to do his best in there. And he actually played well until he did leave, but he was limping most of the game. Jennings blocking a punt. How about that, guys? Without that penalty, Jennings actually blocked a punt. If we didn't get the penalty on that play, we would have had great field position.
Right.
So let's look at some of the positive things. That interception, the first interception, Roman, you mentioned this earlier, that it bounced off. But did you notice that Cruz actually stumbled? He was in the slot, and as he came across, he actually stumbled it. And that's a timing play. Eli let it go, and he has to let it go. And it's not his fault that, you know, it's not Eli's fault that he stumbled and that this guy, the lineman actually stood up and it hit him off the shoulder pad or off the shoulder. It's a freak thing, and it's a shame, you know. And Eli says my bad, but actually, I don't think it was his bad because Cruz fell down. I mean, he didn't fall down fully; he stumbled, so he wasn't in position. He was folded over. So I don't know. Let's look at the positive, guys. We scored 14 points real quick. And that just goes to show you what we can do. How about a screen pass? We had a couple of screens that were wonderful.
That was exciting.
Jennings was beautiful on the screen. A great block by Hanofsky. Also, the tight end on the screen. Wonderful, guys. Come on, we got to look at the positive here. If we play like that third quarter, we're going to win. We're going to win. We should have won this game. It's a shame. It's a real shame that we didn't win this game. So I'll listen off the air to your comments. Thank you, guys.
No, thank you very much for that phone call, and I agree 100%, and I said this a little bit earlier, that it's really this close, the difference between winning and losing. I know it's a coaching cliche, but there's
so many
things.
I know Georgia feels that way. You watch that you watch that South Carolina-Georgia game?
Yes, I did. I was watching Rutgers-Penn State, you know, a little bit more.
Was this close? Anyway.
But, yeah, I mean, there is a lot of improvement. There are some good things we saw out of the offense. I've been praying for an effective screen to be run for 3 years out of this offense, and I think that you're seeing elements of what this team and this offense can become. That no huddle, that rhythmic attack, defense. I saw 3-4 guys around the quarterback. You're seeing Ayers, Hankins got a sack, JPP had 1.5. I mean, you're seeing that swarm to the play. I mean, they're still stopping the run to certain degrees. Now, you got to create turnovers. You got to have some big plays. So I'm glad that this caller, you know, highlighted some of the positives. But, again, this is a team game. You know, that third element being special teams is huge. You know, he pointed out that Demps missed the tackle, that Ted Ginn that resulted in 7 points for the Arizona Cardinals. So when you fix those little things, and you know when that happens, Anita? That happens from Friday afternoon until Sunday morning at kickoff. when you're watching extra film, when you're thinking about the game, when you're playing the game, and you're, I mean, I was a film buff. I mean, I'm glad, I wish I played in this area where I had VHS tapes falling out of my car every time I opened the door, and now I went to see DVDs, my second half of my career. Now everything's on iPads. I mean, I would be watching film all the time. I was ready to, you know, play Friday afternoon. but this isn't about me, obviously. But again, I think it's about the little things. And when you do all those little things, and not only do them all, but all 11 guys doing them at the same time, I mean, that's when you don't have those little mistakes. You don't, if this would happen, if that would happen. It's too hard to win a game in the NFL. And I know there's criticism that the Texans, you know, blew out the Raiders, and then the Redskins weren't. Aren't a solid team at that point, but 2-0 is 2-0. You can't change history, and then 0-2 is 0-2. So as I didn't play for Parcells, and he didn't invent the topic, but it is, you know, you are what your record is until you prove otherwise. You are what you put on film, and what the Giants have put on film hasn't been good enough to win. But the things that they've done well are showing you that there is confidence, there is improvement, that they are grasping the concept offensively. And defensively, now it's time. You know, you need turnovers. You need a pick six. You need the things. You need those knockout plays that'll really increase the chances of winning, and then help the other side of the ball as well.
Just want to make a comment about John Beeson because the caller did bring it up. John Beeson re-aggravated his toe in Detroit playing on that turf.
Right.
So he tried to give it a go this week, hoping that that the field here in New Jersey would be better, but unfortunately, obviously, it didn't help the situation. Real quick, because we've just got about 3 minutes left in the show, I want to get your thoughts. Week 3, NFC East, Cowboys going up against the Rams. Cowboys actually looked quite impressive to me against the Tennessee Titans last week. I'm actually quite shocked they won. But going up against the Rams in St. Louis, a difficult place to play, but them playing obviously with their second-string quarterback because we know Bradford is out. Any thoughts on that game and that matchup?
No, I think that's a game Dallas should win. I mean, I'm always – I don't – study the entire league as much as I do the NFC and more specifically the NFC East. So I'm always looking at the NFC East matchups against other teams because the Giants will eventually play those teams as well. But again, it's really about which team shows up that day. And I know Dallas has shown that they can, you know, they can score some points and they've done well. But again, it'll be interesting to see how it folds out.
It's been all about DeMarco Murray for the Dallas Cowboys. So I'm anticipating a heavy dose of DeMarco Murray and also Zach Stacy in the rushing attack for the Rams. And last but not least, you've got Washington going up against Philadelphia in the city of brotherly love in Philadelphia. Washington now with Kirk Cousins, it looks like RG3 is going to be done for the season with a dislocated ankle. And the Eagles with a very impressive win on Monday night.
Yeah, Eagles did well Monday night. I think going into the season, the Philadelphia Eagles were considered the top of the NFC East. You add Darren Sproles, you make some additions. You have Mike Jenkins, a safety, came from New Orleans, Philadelphia. So Mark Jenkins, the safety. So, I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting matchup when the Giants do meet those teams. But again, I think primarily we have to see if Big Blue can solve the issues that have cost them two games and turn it around on Sunday against the Texans. I think a game that's winnable. This is a winnable game for the Giants. I think
J.J. Watt coming after Eli Manning.
Yeah, I know. And I think
To me, this week, it's all about that offense. You've got to keep J.J. Watt away from Eli.
Yeah, I think they'll throw the ball quick. I mean, I think he'll have his hands up, swats and passes, and I'm sure that McAdoo and crew offensively are finding creative ways to not let J.J. Watt be a factor in this game. And he's a guy. He's going to make some plays. I mean, he's a good player. He has a motor.
Hopefully he doesn't score another offensive touchdown.
No, that's what you don't want. I mean, that's when you're putting a nail in the coffin when a D lineman scores a touchdown on your defense. That's not something you want to see. But that's why you play the game and made the best team that earns the right to win on Sunday.
So Roman Oben and Anita Marks, thank you so much for spending your lunch hour with us today. Stay tuned to Giants.com. Players will be made available to the media following practice. We'll have those interviews for you up online. And so make sure you continue to tune in. And I believe it's Roman Oben and Paul Dottino tomorrow for your lunch hour here on Giants.com with Big Blue Kickoff Live. Have a great day, everybody.